Earlier this year, we heard a presentation by radio host Mark Passio titled Free Energy from Suppression to Manifestation. Who was that influential to take Tesla out of schools? Mark is a member of the Nikola Tesla Club and runs the site whatonearthishappening.com. He joins us to talk about that presentation and other lectures he's given discussing natural law and the New Age deception. We also get a rare insight into how far the influence of the Satanic Church reaches into society and works very hard to manipulate human perception. How effective is human perception being managed? You merely need to take a look around you at how virtually no significant change occurs to the type of primary energy source that drives personal vehicles. Nearly everyone is willing to put a cancer-causing microwave transmitting device to their heads. And a massive global weather control operation continues in plain sight as aircraft release chemicals into the atmosphere, an operation clearly discernible from regular commercial air traffic. Mark, welcome to the show.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Well, in your presentations, you've been defining and discussing what's called natural law. And why is that important to know about in the context of your work?
Well, I think it's really the most important information and the most hidden information when it comes to what humanity really needs to understand. And that's because natural law is the body of laws that ultimately governs the consequences of human behavior. And many people will hear that and think that there is no such thing, that that just doesn't exist. You know, they think that there's laws that govern everything, all matter. There's laws that govern the motions of the galaxies and the solar systems and the planets and down to the interaction of subatomic particles. But the one thing that is magically exempt from law in the universe is human behavior, that we could do whatever we want without consequence. And it simply is not true. There are governing dynamics of human consciousness and human behavioral choice. And that's what I mean when I talk about the term natural law. I define and give the working definition of natural law as universal, meaning omnipresent everywhere within creation, within the whole extant universe. Universal, non-man-made, meaning not made or caused by humankind in any way, okay, made by nature itself, inherent to nature. Binding, meaning that these laws have effect whether we understand them or not, whether we are actively conscious of them or not, whether we want them to exist or not, they are in effect. And immutable conditions, and immutable simply means that nothing we can do can change them. They are unchangeable by anything that we are capable of doing. Just like it's gravity is an immutable law, it is in effect. And there's nothing we can do to change it. We can only learn how it operates so that we can align our behavior and actions into accordance with that law so that we don't suffer as a result of it being in effect in our lives. We can understand how it works. So it's universal, non-man-made, binding, and immutable conditions that govern the consequences of the behavioral choices of intelligent beings, of beings that have the capacity in mind to understand the working operations of natural law. So these laws of consciousness that govern consciousness and govern behavior don't apply to other animals that don't have the same capacity for intelligence as human beings and other hominid type or other intelligent creatures throughout the universe. It applies to beings that are capable of grasping these laws. That's what natural law essentially is. It's been called many things throughout history in different traditions. It's been called moral law. It's been called God's law. It's been called the laws of karma. It's been called the laws of consequence, the laws of cause and effect, consequentialism. All of these are just labels or terms. You could call it really whatever you want. But one thing I want to stress here is that these laws being in effect do not mean that human beings do not have free will. These laws interoperate with free will. Free will exists. So I'll give a quick example. Mm-hmm. We have free will to ignore the law of gravity, do we not? You know, we can ignore it, but not without consequence. It's still in effect. So let's say we say, I'm going to ignore that gravity exists, and I'm going to step over this 50-foot ledge. Well, that would probably be a very bad decision. That you'd end up having a pretty bad day. If not, it would be your last day. Okay, and if it was a higher cliff, it most certainly would be your last day. You know, stepping off of a tall ledge like that is probably not a good idea, because there's a law in effect that governs the motion of the dynamics of physical objects, and gravity is in effect whether we like it or not. So we still have free will to do something that is not smart, even though that law is in effect. Okay, it doesn't countermand free will altogether. Well, the same is true for natural law consequence. In other words, there are laws that are going to govern what happens to the quality of our existence if we behave in certain ways. If we behave in completely moral ways, we get an orderly result in our lives, especially in the aggregate of a whole society, of a whole culture, of a whole species. Then if we behave in immoral ways, we get a completely different result. That doesn't obviate or cancel the gift of free will choice. We have a choice whether we will act in harmony with these laws or whether we will act in opposition to those laws. If we act in harmony with those laws as a result of understanding them, we will receive an orderly consequence, an orderly result, which is called freedom. And everything that we consider is good, freedom, prosperity, peace, harmony, etc. If we act in opposition to these laws, we will receive everything that we consider chaotic and bad and evil, slavery, destitution, destruction, suffering, endless suffering, okay? So that's essentially what natural law is in a nutshell. And again, I call this the most occulted knowledge on the face of the earth. And occult simply means hidden. It is occulted from us. It is hidden from us. There are people in positions of power that do not want us to understand how these laws operate, because our ignorance is their continued source of power and strength, and it's their tactical advantage over the ignorant masses of humanity, because they have this knowledge and how this works, and they are deliberately occulting it or hiding it from the masses of people so that we continue to co-create in the aggregate as a species, as an entire society here on Earth. We continue in our ignorance of these laws to co-create our reality unconsciously instead of in a conscious capacity. Mm.
Mark, we aired your presentation, Free Energy, From Suppression to Manifestation. Who was that influential to take Tesla out of schools? And you talked about how access or availability of knowledge in our society is repressed. You've cited terms such as relativism and scientism. Could you explain that again?
Sure. Well, what I essentially did in that lecture to begin it was I outlined a process that is a methodology for truth discovery. It's actually an ancient process. It's known as the trivium. And I broke it down in the trivium is generally considered a threefold process. I added a fourth, which is a manifested result that you get as a result of your application of the trivium method or your failure to apply it. And I could go over that again. I could also briefly explain what I mean by relativism, specifically moral relativism. So, of course, there's things that are relative to each other. What I'm talking about here in moral relativism is the notion that there is no such thing as the difference between right and wrong in any objective way, that it's all just subjective and we get to make up what's right and wrong and what's good or bad and what's moral or immoral. That's an ideology known as moral relativism. And what moral relativism invariably leads to is in a moral society, because there is no objective standard when it comes to judging the difference between right and wrong behaviors. And there is an objective standard for that. It's whether the behavior causes harm to another being or not that makes it wrong or makes it right if it does not cause harm to another being. It's a very simple definition that most people couldn't even give you the definition of what a right or a wrong is, sadly. That's why we're losing our rights and going into deeper and deeper bondage as a society, is because many people have taken on this ideology of moral relativism. A big part of that is the worship of scientism as a religion. I don't call modern science science anymore. I call it scientism because we don't have real science in our culture. We have what I refer to as scientism, a religion, a dogmatic religion that is government-funded. And I call the practitioners the priest class of the scientism religion, which is a purely left-brained and incomplete. It's not an intelligence-based system of knowledge. It's a purely left-brain intellectual system, which lacks the right brain intuitive and creative capacities to a great extent. And as a result, it's not really based in true intelligence, and it's most certainly not seeking truth. I call it the priest class of this religion, the paradigm protectors. That's my little term that I've coined for them. They are the protectors of a paradigm of the absence of consciousness in any part of the human equation. You know, it's all about the universe being a purposeless, mechanized machine, which is actually a completely erroneous and long since shot down Newtonian-based notion of the physical reality in which we live, of the universe in general. You know, scientists on the cutting edge have really understood that consciousness underlays everything in nature for a long time, actually, probably well over 100 years by now. But unfortunately, as a whole, modern science hasn't even caught up to this new emerging paradigm that includes consciousness. And so the status quo is still ruled by a false variant of science, which I and many other researchers have used the term scientism to describe it, to apply that ism to it, to help explain to people that it's really not true science that is seeking truth, but it's a religion that is there to protect a belief system that is in place about how everything is just a purposeless grand accident and is a mechanized matter holds primacy over everything else, including consciousness and or spirit. So it's very one-sided. It's very imbalanced toward the left brain form of consciousness. And it's not what I would call certainly not based in truth and not based in real intelligence. It's based in pure intellect, which isn't holistic intelligence. That's clearing up those two terms as I use them in my work. But let's go to that other question in which you asked me to talk about the role of knowledge and how important availability of information is in understanding what's going on within us and around us,
right,
so that we can make informed decisions. And this is ultimately how we create our reality,
right,
actually.
Exactly.
So in my Tesla presentation at the New Yorker Hotel back in January, which was called Free Energy from Suppression to Manifestation, I opened it up by describing this model that is essentially the ancient trivium methodology for the discovery of truth. For anyone who is going to be a seeker of truth, this methodology would be taught to them so that they could really understand the difference between reality and falsehood, so that they would be able to process information to know whether or not they were being deceived or led astray, and they were getting accurate information, and they were able to process it accurately, to come to accurate conclusions about it, and then base their behavior on it so that they would get orderly results instead of chaotic ones. This method was known as the trivium, which in Latin means three paths or three roads. Tres tria in Latin means three, and then via means road or path. Now, via also can mean a way, which is what a road is. It's a way to get from one place to another, from here to there. It can take on the connotation of meaning a method or a manner by which you arrive at a certain way of doing things. So it's a methodology as well. So the trivium was the three methods or the threefold methodology for truth discovery. The trivium has been given different names, different handles, I guess you could say. The three processes were known in many different ways. So in the modern way that people look at the trivium, it's been known as grammar, logic, and rhetoric in that order. And you can't take the steps out of order, otherwise the methodology breaks down. The order is very critically important, and we'll see why in a moment. The ancient trivium, this is the terms that were used to describe the steps of the process. It was known as knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. That's actually the ancient or the esoteric variant of the trivium processes. And in the modern world, it's been called grammar, logic, and rhetoric, the steps. Now, there's a third way that people who are in a more computer-oriented or, you know, modern technological system like to refer to the trivium method, and that's simply as input, processing, and output. And I tend to really like that model, actually. I like the ancient model, which is what the ancient terminologies are what I used in my presentation, but I kind of like the computer allegory way of looking at it. We could talk about that as I describe the steps. It's all basically describing the same thing, no matter how you label each step. The knowledge step is the foundation. You start with available information throughout society, okay, wherever knowledge and information can possibly be found. So available information, you could say, isn't knowledge itself. It's potential knowledge. You're going to have to do something with it to arrive at knowledge. So really, available information is what we're talking about here, which constitutes potential knowledge. And that information can be gathered and brought together. It can be aggregated. And then it could be processed by running it through certain filtration systems to weed out inconsistencies, to filter out inconsistencies. And then it can be understood. We can come to an accurate understanding of what that available information means, and then we can act upon it as individuals and as whole societies. So that's really the first step, is the gathering or the aggregation of available information so that we know we have all the pieces. That's why it's been called grammar, okay? You know, grammar of a language are the pieces, the individual building blocks that are going to form the context of the language so that we can communicate ideas. Same thing could be said here for this step of knowledge or availability of information. We're going to aggregate that, bring it all together so that we have as much information as possible that we could start processing, and then we're going to make our decisions on about how we're going to act. So that's the most important step in this process, is gathering the grammar, the building blocks. It's the input in a computer system. If you don't input a good file format, a good operating system, and good software, and then input data that is accurate, that you're going to perform your calculations on or your transforms on or your processing on, if you don't have that data there, good luck doing anything beneficial with that computer system. So the input stage is all important, and that's the foundation of the Trivium methodology. And of course, we'll see as we go forward with this, that's where the controllers attack. They have to attack that stage, because they're not going to attack the other stages, because the information would have already been out there at that stage. So the suppression of knowledge is the most important thing when it comes to controlling an entire paradigm, a whole worldview, or a whole people. Okay? So the next step of the Trivium method is understanding. This is the logic stage in the modern terminology. Or in the computer terminology, it would be the processing stage. So how I describe this level or this stage of this three-step process is, these are our decision-making processes. It's where we're processing the information that we've taken in to come to a conclusion about what are we going to do with this knowledge, in the sense of how are we going to act upon it. It's not taking the action yet, but it's the decision-making processes that go on within the human mind that lead eventually to action in the world. So, of course, these processes are mental processes. They take place in the mind, and they are chosen and worked with by each individual in a society. And it can be different for each individual, because it's always going to be the decision-making processes that go on in our mental capacities are always going to be determined by each individual's taking in of available information. If I took in a very good portion of the available knowledge that's out there, I have a frame of reference or a basis to really process that information and pretty much come to an accurate conclusion about what's really going on. If I apply this understanding method, this processing method, this filtration method to eliminate logical inconsistencies, if I apply it properly, then I'm going to probably come to accuracy, to actual knowledge, to understanding, okay? And if we don't do that because we've lacked available information, we're going to not understand. We're not going to arrive at understanding. We're going to simply be in a state of confusion. And that's unfortunately where most people are at in our society, because they lack so much knowledge. They haven't taken in a good portion of the available information. And a good portion of the available information has either been hidden from them, or it has been dissuaded from being looked into. They have been dissuaded from looking into that information deliberately, by the mass media, telling them, oh, no, this isn't something that you need to understand, propagating, you know, a lot of trivial aspects of what's going on, focusing on minutia, focusing on things that aren't important, and just propagating that to people and saying, here, this is what you need to look at. You don't need to understand any of that. That's all debunked, or that's all, you know, nonsense. And when people fall into that trap of listening to people with no wisdom telling them that certain knowledge is important and other knowledge isn't important, well, they're going to actually themselves limit, not because the information is off limits to them and it's actually not available, but they are themselves going to willfully choose to limit what knowledge they come into contact with.
Regarding focusing on the minutiae and ignoring the reality around mm-hmm. us, you know, through media outlets, a good example of that is the geoengineering and aerosol operations that are basically sure. in plain sight. And we talk about that a lot on this show,
right?
Just to keep it in discussion. And even some of the amazing people in the progressive world and the media, unfortunately, still think it's a hoax, or they don't yep. think it's real. And it's quite shocking in the context of how human beings are processing information, whether it's willful, deliberate, or there's something else going on within the mind, in mind control.
It's absolutely a state of psychological denial known as cognitive dissonance. And this is going on within the so-called truth movement, the so-called freedom movement, the alternative media. So many people want to ignore that such psychopathic individuals can be in control of a society, that they will be spraying chemicals on their own populations for reasons that they believe are necessary, that are actually doing harm to the population and the environment, and people are in denial that that could be taking place. And they're making a critical error in judgment. When it comes to, we could even talk about this in relation to the Trivium method, their decision-making processes don't have enough information about how psychopathy works. And therefore, they're in a state of denial and disbelief when it comes to that there could be people who are this psychopathic and uncaring about the consequences of their behavior. It's a state of childish naivete, but it's combined with this state of cognitive dissonance, of the inability to believe that which you can even see with your own eyes. And it's a very debilitating condition, and it's a difficult condition to come out of, because what they've done is they've actually locked themselves willfully into this state of denial by saying, the world cannot be that. See, it's really childish-like fear when you know, you're witnessing evil, and you're in such a state that you can't comprehend that that's going on. And a part of that mistake, to extend this a little bit, mm-hmm. is they are making a critical error in judgment by trying to actively apply their own moral sensibilities to other people. And that's a deadly mistake to make, a very critically bad thing to try to do, okay? You don't want to try to say, because I would never act that way, that no one else would ever act that way, okay? And therefore, that leads to them to believe there couldn't possibly be anybody in control, in a position of power, to make a decision like this and get this action carried out, such that they have a lack of morality, because I wouldn't do that. So many people, you tell them that evil things are going on in the world, and they'll say, well, that can't be true. They wouldn't do that. And what's really going on in the mental process there is a complete logical fallacy, because what they're really saying to themselves is, because I wouldn't do that, no one else would. And that's a logical fallacy. Not everybody has your same moral and ethical sensibilities. Certainly psychopaths do not. A lot of them lack the knowledge of what psychopathy really is and how many psychopaths are out there in our society. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in denial of that too. People will deny that psychopathy even exists in our society or at all.
We've discussed that on this show a lot as well, and something that you also talk about in your New Age deception presentations, which are fantastic. I'd like to dig into that if we have some time. It certainly fits into the first deception, ignore the negative. And
right.
that connects to something we also talked about on the show is the psychological theory of Carl Jung's, the human shadow, and we dug into that with a number of guests.
Brilliant material by Jung there, you know, and people have to understand, if we don't deal with that shadow, if we don't acknowledge its existence, and then work with that shadow material, it eats us, it tears us apart, That's what we're facing as a society. We haven't done that psychic cleansing work, you know, upon our own psyche. You know, we want to ignore all that shadow material and think it's going to go away and it's not going to negatively impact us as a species. Well, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
If you leave the shadow alone, it doesn't go away. In fact, it continues to grow and evolve on its own, unconsciously, without your knowledge. Unless you consciously examine it and catch it when it's coming up for you in certain situations. And some of the examples past guests have made is when you lose composure in certain situations, that's a good time to catch it and figure out why you did what you did.
Right.
Before we get into your New Age Deception lecture material, I saw that you mentioned your position as a priest in the Satanic Church at one time. Can you talk about that, why you left, and what you gained from that in terms of understanding those who are within that religion, the Satanic Church, what they're doing, and how they're manipulating various aspects of humanity?
Sure. In my youth, I was born into a standard traditional Roman Catholic family in South Philadelphia, and my family was the type of people who just accepted the status quo at face value and never really asked any deep questions. You know, the question why was unheard of generally in my family. And, you know, not that they were bad and moral people, but they were just not really deep thinkers. They're just go along to get along types, generalizing. I was born into that indoctrination and programming, as are most people, let's face it. I mean, you know, it's a rare thing when somebody is not born into something like that, that has conscious parents. And they are very, very gifted to be born to conscious parents and a conscious family. But it's a very few and far between scenario. So, of course, being born into this religious indoctrination, I accepted without a lot of questioning what I was being taught by my parents, my teachers, et cetera, sent to Catholic school. And my late grade school years, maybe even into very early high school years, like freshman year, and then I started questioning that belief, but all that questioning wasn't channeled in any kind of a healthy way. It was all just turned to anger and hatred about what I simply perceived as being lied to at that point. Not consciously. I knew these people didn't understand what it really was about either, but I still lacked an important framework. That framework, by the way, was astrotheology. Because once you understand astrotheology and you understand the origins of religion, and then you understand what religion is being used to do in society, that knowledge is empowering, and it helps you to break that paradigm. And you could do it in a productive and channeled way instead of in a scattered and completely imbalanced way like I broke. I broke the indoctrination, but I went from one form of indoctrination to another form of deception as a result of how I broke it without knowledge, you know. I started gravitating to the exact antithesis of this belief system. I wanted to go into the occult. And I mean, not just hidden knowledge, I wanted to go into the dark occult. Hidden knowledge that's wielded to control others, you know, and it's, you know, Satanism and, you know, darkness and the exact opposite of God. You know, I was looking for that. And I found it in a big way. It wasn't difficult to find. Mm-hmm. You know, they're out there. If you seek that, you'll find it. Right. Too. Just like you seek the light, you'll find that too. Well, you seek the darkness, you'll find it. And I did.
Our guest is Mark Passio, independent researcher and talk show host who runs the website whatonearthishappening.com. We'll be right back after this break. Thank you. you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Mark Passio. He's an independent researcher, talk show host, and runs the website whatonearthishappening.com.
So I became involved with dark occultism, with Satanism in particular, was the they call it the left-hand path. That was the path that I got involved in. I started espousing satanic ideology through writing and music in the vein of that type of ideology, which was being put out there by the Church of Satan, which was then run by Anton LaVey. Mm-hmm. He's since died, and they have new leadership. But LaVey himself appointed me a priest in his organization because, again, not because I went into the organization and was trying to move up in the ranks. He contacted me and said, I like the work that you've been doing about communicating the satanic ideology and worldview to other people through your writing and music. He actually noticed what I was doing and said, I want you to be a spokesperson and a priest in my organization. So I accepted. Mm-hmm. I said, yes, I want to become further involved. And he wanted me to start what's called a grotto. It's the equivalent in Satanism of a coven, mm-hmm. where you are, you know, beginning a organization in your area that espouses this system and pulls other people into the fold. And I didn't accept that. I said, no, I consider Satanism a pretty individual thing, and I don't want to begin a grotto and take on that work and responsibility. I'd rather just practice it in my own life. And I said, what I will do is I'll attend some in this area if you have any contacts. And some other people put me in contact with other individuals in this area, not LaVey himself, but people who were involved in the Church of Satan. And these other grottos were not just Church of Satan grottos. They were Satanists of every type. So there's many different subtypes, groupings, you could say, slight variations on the left-hand path. There were people involved in organizations like the Temple of Set and, just organizations that really didn't have a name, that were just family bloodline dark occultists that didn't identify with one particular group or another. Mm-hmm. They were just dark occultists who were participating in a network of dark occultism that ran throughout society. Satanism, to me, was a personal thing when I started getting involved in it. And it was just like, you know, you went and studied this knowledge about how to manipulate people because you know more about how the psyche works than they do to get what you want, to gain a tactical advantage over other people or to get them to grant you favors or give you positions of influence that you may want, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what it was to me. Is that what it is? Yes, that's partially what it is. But it's so much more than that once you get to a certain level of understanding, once you get to see what this interconnected network of people really is doing. And when I started attending these grottos and seeing who was involved in these organizations, I became aware that I had become involved at a low level with a very organized syndicate that wasn't working, you know, just to work with hidden knowledge about the psyche to just increase their own individual members' power. They were working together. They were working as a tight-knit unit, actually, that was trying to advance the entire group, the entire network or hierarchy's power at the expense of everybody else's rights and freedoms. You know, it was essentially they were claiming to be masters of the world because of the knowledge that they held, and everybody else was essentially going to become their slaves, you know, in so many words. You know, I didn't understand that for many years, but that's how that they were working. I didn't understand some of their terminology, their esoteric terminology. Like, they call the average person the dead. The dead, ladies and gentlemen. That's what they refer to average people as.
What does that mean?
Yeah, for 10 years I didn't understand what that meant. Finally, I began to understand that they were talking about their level of unconsciousness, that they were saying because they have no knowledge, they don't use their thoughts to achieve knowledge, they don't use their emotions to achieve true care, and they don't exercise their actions to create real change in life, they have no willpower, then all three modalities of consciousness, the expressions of consciousness, thought, emotion, and action, are inactive. Therefore, the being is technically unconscious and therefore not really living, not really alive. So they call them the dead. Hmm. That's their name for people that are not them. See, they don't call themselves the sacred and the the uninitiated, the profane, like some other religious traditions might, or some other mystery tradition religions might. You know, they call themselves the masters, and they call their slaves the dead. It's amazing. And I didn't grasp that till after I had left. I never understood what they meant by this term, that they were referring to the dead. Like, what do they even mean by that? They knew what it meant among their own circle. Now, I was even among them, and I just went along and just didn't say, could you explain to me what that means? Because I thought I'd be laughed at, and I probably would have, you know, as naive, as not understanding what they meant by that. I didn't understand that what that term meant till after I had already dissolved my relationship with these groups.
I was going to ask you about that. How did you transition out of it? And now looking around you, can you identify the magnitude of the influence of that?
Sure. Yeah, well, what started leading me to believe I was involved in something that was way over my head and that I should probably not be involved with was the who populated these groups. Who populated these groups were people of power and influence in every single social institution on the face of the earth. You name the institution, okay? Banking, politics, media, law enforcement, entertainment, technology, education, military, medicine. You name the institution. There were people at the highest levels of these institutions that were Satanists and were attending satanic rituals at satanic grotto meetings. And when I recognized that, I said, this is more than I thought it was. This is way beyond what I ever dreamed that this was really about. Because again, I thought this was just a group of people loosely knit, and they shared a common interest in understanding how the human psyche works so they could gain a tactical advantage over others and then increase their own personal benefits and personal power in their daily lives. Okay? I didn't understand that this was a group working together to increase their own collective power at the expense of everybody else's, and that they had infiltrated and weaved their way through and were already in control of every social institution. They were an occult hierarchical network that already had control of the world. Not were looking to take control of the world, but already ran it. And when I understood that in a deep way by just seeing who was involved in these groups, you know, you had judges, you had chiefs of police, forces in different counties throughout the state attending these meetings. You had lawyers who were like the DAs of their entire region.
Wow.
Politicians, people running for local office would attend these meetings. These people were there because they knew that these are the organizations, this hierarchy is the organization who are the controllers of the world, the movers and shakers of everything. Bankers were there at these meetings. You name, like I said, you name it. Doctors, school teachers, principals of schools were Satanists attending these rituals. So what I'm trying to say here is, as soon as I got the message, we're the ones who are already in control. We're not trying to take influence and power. We do this to maintain the influence and power we already have. That's what they gather and focus their attention to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when I understood that, I said, I can't be involved in this. I still have a modicum of conscience. I said, I wanted myself to be a more influential, powerful individual, but I don't want human slavery. I never did. I was never about enslaving other people. Having a one-up tactical advantage on them mentally and psychologically is one thing. Owning, claiming you own somebody else and they're going to work for you and they're going to be your slave, that's something altogether different that requires a level of psychopathy I was never at. I had psychopathic tendencies, but not like that. Not to claim I'm the owner of others and I want to see the world in bondage. So when I understood what it was really about, I said, I can't really be involved in this anymore. And when I started making that known to some individuals, I thought it was going to be a big blowback reaction. Oh, you want to get out? You want to be out of here? You know, we're going to have a backlash against you for taking that opinion or that position. And it was nothing like that at all. Not even close. It was as if I didn't exist.
Wow.
The attitude was, in a nutshell, Okay, little boy, stop bothering us now. Away you go. Away you go. And do your worst. Do your worst to try to explain what you've seen here. You think anybody will believe you? You think you're going to help people? You think you're going to get people to understand what the world is and where they're really at? One of them actually said to me before I actually left a ritual on Walpurgisnacht one night, mid-1990s. This individual said to me, good luck banging your head against a cinder block wall for the rest of your natural existence. They said, if we try to explain to others what we do and how we're in control, the dead would not accept the truth from us if we explained it to them openly, publicly. He said, good luck trying to get that done. There's nothing you could possibly do. That's how much hubris they have. That's how sure they are that they have people's minds exactly where they want them. And I was enraged by this attitude back then. I let it eat at me. Now I know that they're telling me the truth. And people could say, hey, oh, you're still in that worldview. No, I'm not in that worldview. I'm acknowledging they weren't lying to me when they said those things. It doesn't mean I know that I'm not powerless. I am not powerless to affect change, but not in the numbers by myself that, you know, would be required to create real change. Other people would have to expose this. Other people would have to talk about this. Other people would have to start talking about natural law, communicate the truth to other people. It's happening slowly. Mm-hmm. But when they said, you'll be banging your head against a cinder block wall trying to change reality by telling people this, they weren't outright lying to me. It's like one person's not going to make that change happen. But if one person, through modern technology, can communicate the truth to other people, and then they start communicating that truth, now we have a propagation of a wave that could turn into something that could affect real change. So, and they weren't really lying to me about other people's mental position of bondage, you know, because, you know, when I tried to start waking people up around me as to what was really going on regarding this, they don't want to hear it. They want to live their lives in oblivion, oblivious to what's going on around them, thinking that ignorance is bliss. And ignorance isn't bliss. Ignorance is death. Ignorance is slavery. You know, ignorance is total chaos and the perpetuation of total chaos and slavery. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is the only way out. Knowledge is the only way to enlightenment. Knowledge is the only way to real change in the world. People who think they're just going to get that done with a feeling or just going to get that done with taking political action without true knowledge of the human psyche and the laws of nature, good luck. Good luck with that. You'll never get it done that way. True knowledge is required. And many people don't want to hear that, especially people in the New Age movement. They don't want to hear that because they bought this notion that it's all about a feeling. You know, it's all about feel-good spirituality. But this takes us back to the trivium, actually. It's a nice way to go right back into that. We started with knowledge. You understand that, and then you use that knowledge to filter it. You use that available information, you filter it, you come to decision-making processes in the mind, then what do? This leads us to the third step. You act on it, right? Action is then ultimately required. That's the wisdom step of the trivium, or in the modern term, they call that the rhetoric stage. I would also refer to that as the output stage if we refer to it in the computer model terminology. So this is human behavior. And each individual's behavior is inevitably, if you logically think about this, each person's behavior in society is going to be based upon the quality of their understanding when it comes to information that they have taken in. And that's how we manifest the reality that we experience in the aggregate, in the collective way, okay? It's not done on just an individual level. If there's a society of 7 billion people and only about 100,000 people are truly acting in a very moral capacity in total accordance with natural law principles, don't expect that 7 billion society to magically change and have freedom. And don't expect even that 100,000 that are acting in accordance with natural law to have actual physical freedom. They may be free spiritually and mentally and psychologically from psychological bondage and mental chains, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be physically free in a society in which the absolute majority of the aggregate numbers of individuals in that society are still acting in an immoral capacity. So that's how it works. It works in the aggregate numbers. This is also something that a lot of people don't want to hear, especially New Agers. They want to believe a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of any given society can live a certain way, and then magically that's going to create widespread change in society. It doesn't work that way, folks. That's why it's called a quantum shift, an amount. That's what quantum means in Latin. It means an amount of something. An amount is required to create a quantum shift. That's why it's called a quantum shift. And it's not just called, you know, a random shift in consciousness or behavior or, you know, the result that we're getting in creation, okay? It's a quantum shift. That means a certain amount of people are going to be required. And I would say it's got to be at least over half. Minimum is 51%, folks. If you want me to put a number on how many people are going to have to change for this change to go viral, 51% is the minimum. I would say it's probably more than that if I'm being more hype, you know, really realistic and giving people an accurate number. But the most optimistic number I could give anybody of the, what amount creates any kind of a quantum shift is 51%. And we aren't even at 1% of people who understand natural law. We're not. I would say the amount of people who probably understand natural law, if I was being generous, mm-hmm. is 1/100th of 1%. And like I said, I'm probably so over-exaggerating that number that it's probably so over-optimistic that I'm probably kidding myself. I would say if 1/100th of 1% understands natural law to any deep degree, that would be an optimistic number where we're at right now in society, if I just had to place a random number on it.
Mark, I really admire your work and the way that you've outlined and organized it. And I want to mention that this information could be very useful for some of the listeners.
I appreciate that.
When I look at it, I know this takes a lot of work and dedication. So the New Age religion has come up in this interview, and that's an area that you've also researched. Could you start to summarize the New Age deception lecture you've been presenting in various cities around the country?
Absolutely. I've given a presentation now a few times called New Age Bullshit and the Suppression of the Sacred Masculine. And I apologize if that language isn't allowed on the AM and FM affiliates. What this presentation is, it's dispelling a lot of false so-called spiritual teachings of the movement known as the New Age movement. Now, again, I'm not talking about zodiac houses here when it comes to New Age, the house of the age of Aquarius, etc. I'm talking about a set of so-called spiritual teachings that are not rooted in what I would call a grounded set of knowledge and wisdom. It's feel-good pseudo-spirituality. And it's being propagated by many, many, many teachers out there. And this knowledge, so-called, this quote-unquote knowledge, is actually being fed to a lot of these teachers by the dark elements of occultism that is out there, because they don't want people to understand real spirituality. They want them to have this pseudo-spiritual feel-good variant of, quote, spirituality, so that they can't actually make any real change happen in the world. And therefore, the sacred masculine of action leading to real change in the world is suppressed, hence the subtitle, The Suppression of the Sacred Masculine. It was originally 10. My new presentation, which is going to be out very soon, that I gave in Asheville, North Carolina last weekend, it contains 15 New Age deceptions, which I'll briefly outline here. What I do in the presentation, for those of you who want to go and check it out on my website, whatonearthishappening.com is my website, and you could see this presentation there, is I outline the deception, and then I balance the deception with what I call a New Age correction. This is the correction to the erroneous spiritual teaching, or the deceptive spiritual teaching, that is given by the New Age community. And then I talk about the real intended meaning, or the real spiritual message that needs to be understood regarding that concept that they are teaching in a distorted sense. So here are the deceptions in a very brief outline. The first is ignore the negative. If it's negative, I don't want to see it, hear it, talk about it, certainly not discuss it with other people, because then I'm bringing people down, you know, when in fact ignoring the negative is what creates further ignorance and chaotic outcomes in society if we just ignore reality. Like I like to say, you can ignore reality, but not without consequence. You have to respect existence or expect resistance from the universe. Respect the existence of that which is, or expect resistance from the nature of everything. Expect resistance from the universe itself, creating negative experience in your life. So that's ignore the negative. Never get angry, okay? There's no purpose for the or role for the emotion of anger. And I talk about we need righteous indignation if we're going to create real change to motivate us to take action. Number three is we're all one, so it's all good. This is moral relativism. Everything is good. There's no such thing as right and wrong. Those are subjective judgments that have nothing to do with something that's objective and existing in nature. Well, there is objective right and wrong. And the reason that we're living in a prison societally is because people don't understand the law of freedom, that as moral behavior in the aggregate of a society increases, freedom for that society increases. And as immoral behavior increases, slavery increases. So morality and freedom are directly proportional to each other. New Age deception number four is you can never really know. This is called solipsism. To obtain actual knowledge of anything is not really possible. It's all just subjective and it's all just opinion, and everybody's viewpoint is equally as valid. The notion that someone else's totally uneducated opinion, totally uninformed opinion, is as good as someone else's multiple decades of research and knowledge. Okay? So that's solipsism. Five, it's all an illusion. Nothing's real, so nothing matters. Well, at some deep level of non-differentiation, down at the quantum level, yeah, everything is one. I get that. But that doesn't mean that nothing matters. The experience here is why spirit incarnates in the physical domain. This is a construct for learning and experience of the essence of who we are. So that's New Age Deception 5. New Age Deception 6, evil is necessary. So many New Agers believe this nonsense. This is a misapplication of the understanding of polarity, that polarity is one thing expressing itself in different scales of differentiation. And that doesn't mean you go into one polarity and stay, one form of polarity and stay there, which is what evil is, okay? It's a misunderstanding of the laws of karma, like people are somehow being punished for what they did and we shouldn't step in and stop evil when it's happening. You know, like you see the injustices in the Hindu caste system and they say, oh, it's all karma from past lives. This is all nonsense. And it's a misunderstanding of free will. It's a dismissal of free will. Evil is not something that has to happen. It's a choice. It's a behavioral choice. Number seven, accept everything and never resist. And that's what it's all ultimately about. The whole New Age movement's a religion to get people to stand down and not take real action in the world, not use their masculine energy to make things change. New Age deception number eight is the watered-down version of the laws of attraction. Again, natural law is the real law of attraction and how to apply it in your life. This watered-down version, the secret as it's propagated by the New Age movement, I want to get what's mine. I want to have the better job, the better clothes, the better house, etc. It's all very ego-oriented, service to self-oriented, whereas the real law of attraction is not only service to others-oriented, it's service to truth-oriented. So the real secret is natural law, and understanding that helps you to come into contact with the real laws of attraction. Number nine, no one is ever to blame. Blame does not exist. Yeah, and what this really teaches people is that responsibility doesn't really exist, and there's no such thing as moral culpability. People who are actually responsible for harm that was done to others. And we have to understand moral culpability in a very straightforward and streetwise way. The person who took the action is ultimately morally responsible for the harm that was caused by that action. So there is such a thing as blame. There is such a thing as culpability. It exists. I'm not saying to just dwell in that and let that eat you up, but certain people are to blame for harmful actions that they take. Common sense. Number 10, the false notion of forgiveness. To just keep excusing people endlessly for wrongs that they do. That's not real forgiveness. Real forgiveness is a two-way street that involves an apology, first and foremost, on the part of the wrongdoer to the one that they wronged. And to claim that, you know, they're not going to do that action again. They're going to desist in that harmful action. Then you can forgive them. That's real forgiveness. You know, somebody has to offer something first, an apology, and then you're forgiving them. You're saying, I accept your word that you're not going to do this anymore. And therefore, you know, we're okay. We're even. I don't have to take any action against you. I'll give you another chance to act right. That's 10. 11, chaos should be feared. No, chaos is actually a teacher. Making mistakes is one of the best ways that we learn. Number 12, truth doesn't need to be defended. You hear this constantly in the New Age circles. Yes, truth does need to be defended because it's constantly under attack by lies, mind control, disinformation, etc. Of course, we need to speak the truth at all times and places because truth is constantly under attack in the modern world. 13, enlightenment's only about changing yourself and feeling good all the time. This is that notion of the New Age religion as feel-good spirituality. You know, if you're enlightened, you should never, you know, feel bad. You should always feel good. It should always be making you uplifted like you've just done some kind of great drug. No, that's not what enlightenment is. As a matter of fact, enlightenment can be very, very, very uncomfortable, especially when most other people are still dwelling in total darkness. You know, you have to use that discomfort to motivate yourself to educate other people, because that's what the real great work is the education of others. And most people don't want to do that work. You know, they look at that and say, oh, my God, that's what you're telling me because I have this knowledge. That's now my responsibility. Yeah, that is. When you have knowledge, your responsibility is to educate your fellow man. And most people don't want to hear that either. Number 14, love is all you need. No, knowledge you need. You need courage. You need willpower to act properly, you know, in the world, to take right action. So there's other things you need other than love. Love is not everything. Care is very important, and it is the ultimate generator of our experience, what we care enough about to then take action upon. Don't get me wrong. Love is the expansive force of consciousness, and it is absolutely required, but it's not all that's required. And this is another subtle deception that you hear constantly propagated by the New Age. And then finally, number 15, I had a little bit of fun with this, making some jokes about all the different variants of saviors that are going to come to rescue us. New Age Deception 15 is that a savior is coming any day now, you know? So I went into, like, all the different saviors that are prophesied to come and save humanity from its own ignorance in my last presentation on this topic, listed all these saviors and said, yeah, you know, they're just tripping over each other to come and rescue us from ourselves. You know, we have to do it. We have to do that work, ladies and gentlemen. It's not going to be done for us externally. When you look for that, you're just externalizing your power to some mythical entity, deity, or force that isn't interested in propping you up and being responsible for your spiritual uplift. So that's the New Age deceptions in a nutshell. And that's a little addendum to the interview that we did here today.
Absolutely. Mark Passio, radio host, independent researcher, and director of the site whatonearthishappening.com. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Jeff, thank you so much for providing the opportunity.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m.